This is a post from sjhoward.co.uk, published on Sunday the 3rd of May 2015. It's called James is Wrong About Giving 16 and 17 Year Olds the Vote. My friend, James O'Malley, argues on his blog that 16 and 17 year olds should be given the vote, as it will help to tackle the seemingly undue attention given to old people by political parties. Quote, by increasing the potential pool of voters at the bottom, it affects the potential electoral mathematics that the parties have to do to maximise their votes. If there are more young people who can vote, it tips the scales back toward the young. Pensioners might be reliable voters, but if there are an extra 1.6 million-ish young people on the electoral register, that might be a greater motive for refocusing policies and priorities. End quote. I'm undecided on whether 16 and 17-year-olds should be allowed to vote. I see good arguments on both sides, but I think that James's specific argument is wrong for reasons mathematic and democratic. First, the maths. For the purposes of these back-of-the-envelope calculations, I'm using ONS projections for England, as that's what I have at hand, defining the youth vote as 29 and under, and defining the grey vote as 60 and over. Currently, the youth vote accounts for roughly 20% of eligible voters, versus roughly 29% for the grey vote. Giving the vote to 16 and 17-year-olds would move these percentages to about 22 and 29%. That is to say, it wouldn't make much difference. And the difference is lessened further by the fact that most people agree that the youth vote is less likely to turn out than the grey vote. But of course, the real imbalance in the youth versus grey votes isn't in 2015. The population is ageing. The scale of the imbalance today is nothing to what the scale of the imbalance will be in the future. If we fast forward a couple of decades to the 2035 election, ONS projections suggest that the youth vote, as currently defined, would make up roughly 18% of the electorate, versus 37% or thereabout of the electorate being grey voters. Giving 16 and 17-year-olds the vote rebalances this a titchy bit to 20% and 36% respectively, but this difference is really so little as to be meaningless. The imbalance remains far greater than it is under the current system today. My second problem with James's argument is democratic. He reckons that the makeup of the electorate needs to be changed to better balance it in age terms, because generational disputes cause problems in our country. As an example, quote, the old, who own property, want the value of their homes to continue to increase, while it would be better for the young people, who Ed Miliband calls generation rent, if property prices were to fall, so that buying a house can become even a remote possibility. End quote. But surely, to suggest that's a problem is profoundly undemocratic. We have decided that the best way to run our nation is by the majority electing representatives who they think will best serve their interests. The majority of the population is ageing. We shouldn't go around thinking of ways to fix the result to better reflect youth interests, because the youth is in the minority. If we stick with our current form of representational democracy, then for the foreseeable future, our politics will continue to be determined by the grey vote, as it is the grey vote which makes up the largest part of the electorate. The different electoral turnouts between the generations certainly exacerbate the problem, but they are not the source of it. Having said all of that, there is a problem here. Actually, it probably is unreasonable for the electorate to become so imbalanced. Not generationally imbalanced, but gratuitously imbalanced between net financial contributors to the state and net financial users of state services. It's hard to see how a state can function when politicians essentially only have to appeal to those who use the state services, especially the elderly, and have to appeal less to those who, by and large, pay for it. Largely the working aged. It becomes perfectly logical for politicians to whack up tax rates or borrow with little regard to the future. Of course, this probably won't actually happen. It's more likely that the grey vote will be effectively capped at a certain size as people work longer, as neither the state nor individuals can afford to pay for pensions which increasingly approach or even exceed the length of an individual's working life. and, of course, outrageous levels of tax and spend would probably provide a good incentive to improve low turnout in the younger section of the electorate, which would provide a degree of rebalance in and of itself. On the other hand, things could get worse much more quickly. We're seeing national and international narrative opinion increasingly extending the length of childhood. We've already seen in the UK a major shift in legislation pushing the end of childhood in terms of, for example, school leaving and consumption of cigarettes, from 16 to 18. There's increasing scientific evidence that key elements of development, particularly emotional development, continue until the early 20s. UNESCO considers our period of youth to continue until 25. The African Youth Charter considers it to continue until 35. In this context, it's not inconceivable that a future government might choose to increase the voting age, not decrease it. To summarise, give 16 and 17 year olds the vote if you want, but do it for good reasons, not because you want to fix the outcome of elections in a way that will matter little and matter for a short time. Oh, and go and read James's post too.